This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving around again this week. Because last week, it is raining outside. So I'm going to turn on the windshield wipers. Last week, I thought I had a meeting at the church. So I'd run to Walmart, get a little bite to eat, get a little salad. And then I went ahead and went to the church. As it turns out, it got canceled. Moved to this week, so I'm back driving around again. So I don't know how long this is actually going to be, but we're going to get a podcast done. You know, can't miss the podcast. This is episode 465. And we're coming up on 9 years worth of podcasts. 9 years worth of podcasts. 9 times 52. It's going to be 468. This is 465. I've already warned the family. It's coming up in 3 weeks. Got to do a podcast. So we're going to try to get everybody together in a car. Drive around a little bit or set up something at the house. We'll do something. Just a yearly review and see where we've gotten in the past year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this week, everything's fine at work. We're puttering along, getting things done. Everything's fine. That's all going well. Our book is moving along. I'm actually on the last chapter, the news chapter, this week. So that's chapter 33. It's supposed to be chapter 30, and I may reorganize the chapters to make it chapter 30 because the table of contents is stretched top to bottom at this point, and if I get too many more chapters in it, it's going to break over onto another page unless I reduce the font size. So we'll see as I'm doing my read-throughs. I'll see if I want to reorganize and actually crank more pages into each chapter, and you know, got to go through that. But you know, I think it's going to be okay. It's rough. It needs a read through. I'm going to do that next. Hopefully we'll start that read through on Sunday. Get a little ahead. Give me a little extra time to get the cover put together, etc., etc., etc. Then we'll see how many beta readers I actually have this time. Since I offended several of them last time with all my talk about sex. But that's okay too. So we'll just see how many we end up with. I think this is a well-qualified book for the end of the first eight. There's a lot of nice stuff in this book, a lot of nice moments. And so yeah. I think it's going to be fine. So I still have to write the epilogue. I'm probably writing the epilogue this weekend. It'll be interesting. This one is going to be an interesting one to write. There's the potential for it to, you know, go a little long. But that's okay. That's all right. So we'll see. We'll see how all that goes. So that's good. Just quickly, because I'm going to be coming up on church here in just a little bit, which is where my meeting is tonight. I came across this article, and I'm not going to read you the title, because as soon as I read the title, I went, what? and then I was interested in learning more. This is talking about, this article was talking about, and I don't think this is recent, maybe it is. I didn't copy rats. I didn't copy down the date on the article, but now that's gonna get obnoxious quick. I can go ahead and I can look it up pretty quick because I had breakfast with a buddy today, and I actually sent him the link today on this because I thought it was a really interesting article, and so we were chatting about this a little bit today. We were rapidly chatting. Oh, well, February 12th. So I guess this is a recent article. So there you go. Anyway, so they were talking about the brain. And how the brain, that brains, not Brian's, but brains, receive input from the outside world. And their neurons do something with that input, and they create an output. So that output may be a thought, maybe an action, maybe a change in mood. Whatever the output, that something is a transformation of some form of input to output. And the author of the article was saying, if we think of the brain as a device that transforms inputs to outputs, then inexorably, the computer becomes our analogy of choice. So because we have computers, we look at our brains, we say, oh, they must work like that or something like that. Yeah, maybe. He said, for some, this analogy is merely a useful rhetorical device. For others, it is a serious idea, but the brain isn't a computer. So he's got a picture of a neuron here, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see pictures and representations of neurons, but man, I don't know if you've seen any of the brain deciphering they do, where they take like a centimeter of mouse, is it centimeter maybe? Centimeter of mouse brain? Millimeter of mouse brain? I don't know, it must be centimeter. Or 10 millimeters, I don't know, whatever. And what they do is they take slices of it, and then they colorize it and digitize it, and then they put all those slices together so that you can actually see what the neuron looks like, which is a bit of a challenge because we have these pictures we see of neurons, and they have all these branching, beautiful branching things that grow out. But that's all tangled up inside. So you've got all these neurons and they're all tangled up and everything is packed together. And, you know, it's not just hanging out there by itself. So sometimes when we look at these pictures, it's a little deceptive. But they have a picture in this article. And you've got the neuron. There's a little clump, kind of a ball in the center. And then you've got all these tendrils, some really long that are stretching out, some shorter. And there's dozens and dozens of them hanging out. So up to this point, everybody thought, okay, you got the neuron's body, the black blob in the middle, and the rest of the wires out. They call them dendrites. And everybody thought, well, okay, that's a dendrite. Great. That picture is of a pyramidal cell, the neuron that makes up most of your cortex. So this is the workhorses. All right. So there are these dendrites that are out. They are the twisting cables that gather together input from other neurons near and far. Those inputs fall across the dendrites, some up close to the body, some out farther on the tip. Where they fall matters. Normally, when we're talking about how neurons work, we usually end up with the sum up inputs and spike output idea. So that's very simple. That what it, all these dendrites just grab inputs, and when all those inputs sum up to a certain level, then the neuron fires. Boom, goes. And so then spike from its body down its axon go to be an input to other neurons. So that's kind of the mental picture that we have of all this. So it's a handy mental model for thinking about neurons, forms the basis for all artificial neural networks. And according to this article, it's wrong. According to this article, that is not how it works. He says, those dendrites are not just bits of wire. So they aren't just feeding the neuron at the center. They also have their own apparatus for making spikes. This is really, really important. So depending on where you hit these dendrites, if two inputs hit them, and if you have multiple inputs into a dendrite, you actually get different responses, and they put out their own spikes. So maybe if you have one hitting it, you get a one back. But maybe if you have two hitting it, you'll get like a one and a half. And then if you have three, you get a four. And if you have four hitting it, you get a five. And if you have five hitting it, you get a six. And then if you have six getting it, you get like 6.2. It's not 1-to-1. There are these sudden jumps that you get. So you can have this bit of dendrite that is super linear. One section of it. So that one section, when you do like 2 plus 2, you actually get 6. And they said, you know, we've known about these local spikes and bits of dendrite for many years. They've seen the local spikes within slices of the brain. They've seen them in brains of anesthetized animals when they're having their paws tickled. But what's interesting about this is when they start looking at them more deeply and trying to figure out what's going on, because the dendrites of pyramidal neurons, according to this article, contain many separate branches, and each can sum up and spit out a spike, which means that each branch of a dendrite, so you get the neuronal body at the center, and then you have these dendrites going up, and then they have tips that branch out. Each branch of the dendrite acts like a little nonlinear output device, summing up and outputting a local spike if that branch gets enough inputs at roughly the same time. So, but at that point, of course, if we're thinking about this, according to the article, our response would be, well, wait a minute. Wasn't that the model of how the neuron worked? And yes, it was. But now, see, if we replace that model, overall model, and we move that actually into the each of the dendrites, now all of a sudden we don't just have this simple sum it up and spit it out when it comes to the neuron. You actually have all kinds of inputs that are coming into the dendrites. The dendrites are having a reaction to them, and then those reactions are being fed down and having a reaction down at the neuron. And what you actually end up with is not just a single firing thing that just gets a bunch of inputs and bam, it's going. You actually have decisions being made at the edges about all the dendrites and body and stuff. And you end up with what the AI people would call a two-layer neural network. Each neuron, a two-layer neural network. He said there was beautiful work by Poizari and Mel back in 2003 showing this explicitly. They built in a complex computer model of a single neuron simulating each little bit of dendrite, the local spikes within them, and how they sweep down to the body of the neuron. They then directly compared the output of the neuron to the output of a two-layer neural network, and they were the same. Now, why is this a big deal? Okay. The extraordinary implication of these local spikes is that each neuron is a functioning neural network by itself. So by itself, the neuron can compute a huge range of so-called nonlinear functions. Functions where it's not just sum it up and spit it out, but you could have, for instance, four inputs, blue, sea, yellow, sun. And two branches acting as little nonlinear devices, then you can set up a pyramidal neuron to compute a feature binding function. All this means is that you can take very complex inputs then. So, for instance, you can get the neuron to respond only to blue and sea and to yellow and sun, but not to respond otherwise. You know, not to blue and sun together, not to yellow and sea together. And that's if you just have four inputs. Thing of it is, is that these neurons have more than four inputs and have more than two branches. They have dozens and dozens of branches and inputs. And all these things are mapping and having this ability to make these decisions and things. Very complex. And not only that, it's not an on-off state for an analog neuron like it is with digital stuff. Because you can have these variances. So you can have like a 3.5 measurement. You know, one of the big things about quantum computing is that it's just not on-off. It's on-off and both, and it has these other states. Well, the same idea would hold true for a neuron. It's not just did I fire or did I not fire. It's how strong was the firing. And all this gets really, really interesting. So, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He said, so all this adds up to the conclusion that almost all neurons could, in principle, be two-layer neural networks. There's some other little interesting things about this, like how does the brain compartmentalize information? Or does it? Or does it just, you know, it's not compartmentalized and information pops up in weird places, like sound and brain regions dealing with place. But the other answer is that, yes, it is compartmentalized. Well, now they're thinking, well, okay, so maybe it is compartmentalized and what's happening is this information is actually held out in the dendrites, not in the neurons. So there's a lot of little interesting things in here. And this begins to explain some of the little weird oddities that you get into, like in the visual cortex. Because you have things like some neurons fire their spikes to things that are perceived as being at a 60-degree tilt, or at 90 degrees, or 120 degrees, when our brains are doing pattern recognition. And so one of these things is that, one of the conclusions to this is that maybe all the dendrites, all the branches, they're actually getting all the information about the image. And what they're doing is their little local neural network is then deciding it's only going to react when it sees something at a specific angle. I mean, this is really fascinating stuff. So you end up with neurons then that are working through a two-layer neural network to decide what they're actually going to respond to. And it's very, very sophisticated. It's not just sum up and bang. So they ended up by saying, so what does this all matter? It means that each neuron could radically change its function by changing just a few of its inputs. So that's about relearning, and it's very interesting. You should go read the article. I'll tell you the article, name of the article later, but it's getting late. I got to get inside and get some food. Okay, so now, here we go. Boom. Okay, so what does this all mean? All right. So it means that the brain can do many computations beyond treating each neuron as a machine for summing up inputs and spitting out a spike. Yet that's the basis for all the units that make up an artificial intelligence neural network. It suggests that deep learning and its AI brethren have but glimpsed the computational power of an actual brain. You know, there's these all these predictions. Like Kurzweil has made a prediction that we'll have human-level intelligence in 12 years. Well, he's done that because they've been treating the individual neurons just like sum up and spit it out, like, you know, they're all just the logic gate, and then they make some calculations and they say, well, yeah, okay, so the brain's roughly computing power is equal to this, and we're doubling every year, so therefore we should be able to get there in 12 years. You know, and maybe that's true, maybe that's not true, because in fact, if these neural networks operate, if our neurons are, in fact, each is a two-layer neural network, that changes everything with the amount of computational power that the brain actually has. And in fact, it means that the cortex is not a neural network. It is a neural network of neural networks. It is a massive neural network composed of other neural networks. Hence the title of the article, because your cortex contains 17 billion neurons. 17 billion neurons, and each of them could adequately be described as a functioning computer. So the title of this article is Your Cortex Contains 17 Billion Computers. Now, just to put that number in perspective, I looked it up, and it was a projection that I looked up. So the projection may be off, and I didn't chase it down to find the actual number. But a projection I was looking at that was made in 2013, I think, was saying that by the year 2015, the expectation was that there would be 10 billion computing devices, 10 billion computing devices connected to the worldwide internet. 10 billion. You think of all the computers that are out there connected to the internet, all the IoT devices, all the phones, all those things that are all communicating on the internet. And your brain, in your cortex, has 17 billion neurons, where each neuron is functioning like a mini computer. A very complex, intricate little mini computer. Gives you some idea of the glory that there is in your brain. And they're saying, okay, maybe that just applies to your cortex, but it's possible that that same idea could apply across your entire brain. And if it does apply across your entire brain, now we're not talking about 17 billion neurons. Maybe we're talking about 86 billion neurons, because we are fearfully and wonderfully made. This is Phil Ferrand, and I'm getting a phone call. It's time for me to go see you. Bye. Oh, and I have made it to the church. That's the coolest ringtone in the world, by the way. This is the coolest ringtone in the world. Have a great week.